Hey everyone, welcome to another great show. I'm Melanie Johnson, one of the owners and founders of Elite Online Publishing, along with my business partner, Jen Foster. Hey, Jen.
Hey everyone, how's it going today?
Well, we have a great show. You know, one of the conversations that's been going around lately is boomers are selling their businesses. People are stepping away. They don't have someone to give it to. They don't know what to do with it. But how do you actually go about selling it? What's the best way to do it? How to buy a good business, but at a great price and turn around and make it profitable? We have an expert with us. He's not only written the book, he's written the course. He's written multiple things, multiple articles about this. Welcome, Richard Parker. Thanks for joining us today. And let's hear your story.
Well, good morning. Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Tell us, Richard, how did you get in the business of helping business owners buy other businesses?
So there's two parts. It's business owners and, of course, individuals. Okay. I've purchased 14 companies, including one co-investment. And one company that I was looking at a number of years ago, I was very close to pulling the trigger. I had a contract in place, agreement in place. I was going through the due diligence, investigating the business. And as I was digging deeper into the due diligence and the financials, just the working between the companies, and this group had multiple companies. So as I was digging in, like the whole thing was just starting to look like a plate of spaghetti. Like I couldn't figure things out. And I've done this many times. I'm not the brightest guy in the room, but I know this stuff. And I couldn't figure it out. And I really said to myself, like, I don't think I'll ever figure out how to figure this out. They had multiple companies. They're taking money from one, putting it into another. I don't think they were doing anything fraudulent, but you just couldn't. It was too much commingling, paying employees for one that were working for another. And I decided to back out of the deal. And I said to myself, as I walked out of the parking lot, I was actually doing the inventory right at this location. I told the owner, I'm not going through with it. I left. I was standing in the parking lot. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, the average person would have bought this business. It's only because I've gone through this so many times that I knew what to look for, where to dig, etc. And that got me really interested in what does the average person do who's got, you know, hopes and dreams and aspirations to get into their own business, change their life. They have some, you know, entrepreneurial blood running through their veins. They want to buy a business. Like, what do they do? And I thankfully, financially, you know, I was in very good shape. And I took a year off to really research the industry, because the more I started to dig in, I was like curious about all of this, the more I realized like this is a disaster. Like there's no good resources. And this is starting 20 years ago. The internet wasn't what it is now. Information wasn't as readily available. And don't get me wrong, it's actually worse in some cases related to the internet because there's so much bad information. But I spoke to hundreds of people who had bought businesses, an equal number who tried to buy businesses and failed, business brokers, lenders, accountants, attorneys, and started realizing there's no good resource for the average person. And when I say a good resource, I'm not talking about selling like a delusional course teaching people how to buy businesses for no money down. None of that. A practical guide with proven strategies that could walk people through the process. The other thing that I learned during all of this is that aspiring business buyers really felt alone. In other words, they may have some information available, but as they start going through the process, they really wanted someone to hold their hand and really help them out, a mentor, advisor, and someone who is going to dispense unbiased advice, not a business broker, for example, who represents the other side of the deal. I mean, they're not getting unbiased advice. And so with all of that, I had great files, very well organized. I kept terrific notes of things that I had done when situation arose, what I did, what was the counter action, what was the outcome, etc. And I decided to put it all into a course that would teach people what they need to know, what to do and how to do it, and that I would provide them with ongoing free consulting, because the handholding part. And I put it all together. I had no aspirations of this turning into a business. And I've told this story hundreds of times. My wife asked me the night before we launched, how many courses do you think you're going to sell? And I said, you know, if I could help one person buy the right business or avoid buying the wrong one, good enough for me. I just wanted to memorialize everything that I had learned. And here we are a number of years later with multiple updates. We've sold over 100,000 of these and it still blows my mind. So that's a very long-winded answer to your very distinct question. So hopefully that addresses all of it.
Well, let's unwind this and start like from the beginning. Let's say, gosh, there's opportunities out there to buy businesses. How do I choose? What's the right business? What's the right industry for me?
But you hit the nail on the head of the most important piece of the entire process, because there's 23 steps in the process from thinking about should I do this right to after I close and what do I do after I close the deal. buying, how to choose the right business is without fail the most important piece. And it's a process of elimination because you really have to get in tune with that, because you've got to match your best skill set to a business that needs that to drive the revenue and profits. Because there's a lot of good businesses, but if they're run by the wrong people, they're going bankrupt. And so getting a crystal clear picture of what your greatest skill set is critically important, meaning, is it sales? Is it marketing? Is it operations? Is it manufacturing know-how? Is it social media marketing or a version thereof? Is it putting a plan together? Is it organizing people? Is it project manager? Everyone has this one skill set above others that really, it really sets them apart or sets their skills apart from all the other ones. That's what you have to get in touch with. And the only way to do that is to determine what particular business types need that skill set. In other words, you don't know if it's commercial landscaping. You don't know if it's a durable medical equipment supplier. You don't know if it's a manufacturer. So once you have to go visit and speak with lots of businesses, lots of owners, the owners of businesses that are looking to sell, as well as businesses in similar industries. So you could find out specifically, what does the owner do every day in that business that drives the revenue and profits? And once you are able to hone that down, because you look at it like a hopper, you may have to visit, you know, we tell people pick four categories you think may be right, speak to five sellers in each, that's your laboratory. And then you could determine what they do every day, et cetera. And you start to whittle it down. Because at the beginning, you have this very broad approach. You want to get it very succinct so you can focus accordingly.
This is kind of a, so what do you think that Elon Musk brought to the table to buy Twitter?
A couple of things. Number one, I think he was, from an altruistic standpoint, I fundamentally believe, whether people like him or don't like him, I think he's obsessed with free speech, number one. And I think he saw in Twitter, if this was the only thing, if he had to take all of his money and bet everything on that particular investment, I don't think he would have done it. Because I don't think that lends itself to what he's particularly skilled at. But I do think when you have that kind of money, I think he looked at it and said, hey, I'm obsessed with free speech. I think things are going sideways. I believe that I can right the ship to make sure, at the very least, free speech is respected, and this is the platform. And he also has the advantage of having gobs of money. So, I mean, that sometimes can change the dynamic. But if you take a look at what he's done with other businesses, with Tesla, whatever, what his greatest skill set is, he is able to identify opportunities that are massive. I'm not talking about someone who says, oh, you know what, maybe we're going to start, you know, this great opportunity in my digital marketing business. If we're going to start, let's start, you know, using three hashtags instead of seven and at least a better SEO. This is like massive scale, and sees that there's really an opportunity to change things on in a massive way. And that's why when you look at his businesses, whether it be rockets, whether it be Starlink, whether it be Tesla, I mean, he looks at something that's huge. And you need a very specific talent to execute that plan financially, from a project standpoint, to be able to take concept to translate that into a plan and to execute that plan. I mean, that's clearly his skill set, is stand back and say, this is where there's an enormous opportunity, an enormous void, and here's how we're going to solve for that.
I like that. It's kind of taking a step back and looking at your superpower. And then saying, okay, what can I go into? Like Elon, his superpower, like you were saying, is that he had gobs of money. And
he gobs of money, which usually helps, right? But everybody has their superpower. Most people, you know, most people are not really in tune with it. What they think they're really good at might not necessarily be the case. Or what they like to do, they often confuse with what they think they're good at doing. And the third thing where they get into trouble is confusing experience with expertise, because experience means, like, you guys have been into, you know, publishing or digital marketing businesses, and you think, well, I got to buy a publishing business. But that's not necessarily, that's experience. It's what you did specifically within a particular industry, which is your greatest skill set. Because for you, you know, Jen, it may be marketing, and for you, Mel, it might be design. And so it's, you can apply those skills to a huge array of other industries, and you don't have to remain in the publishing business.
That makes sense. You know, it seems like kind of confusing out there. I know there's brokers, not brokers, Do you hire a broker if you're the buyer? I mean, in real estate, there's a buyer's broker and a seller's broker agent. Is it the same way when you're buying a business? And do you need a broker to represent you when you want to buy or sell?
No and no. So let me add, it's not the same as real estate, because in real estate across the country, brokers share listings, meaning if the broker, if the seller has a broker and a buyer has a broker, they'll share listings, they'll collaborate, they'll cooperate. In business brokerage, I think there's only about 17 or 18 states that have co-brokering. My number may be off a little bit, but not by much. So in other words, a broker has a listing in Alabama representing a seller. He or she does not necessarily share listings with a buyer's broker. And so that individual buyer may never see that listing. And so a broker in business brokerage, I look at as three things. If you're selling a business, I've used the broker most of the time because I like them to, they're able to get the deal done. They know what documentation is needed. They're not going to negotiate for me on either side as a buyer or seller. They're good to deliver bad news to the other party, because the buyer is going to need the seller for transition, and the seller wants to have a nice relationship with the buyer. But you also, if you're selling a business, so from a buyer, no, you don't need a buyer's broker unless you're paying them, because if they're getting paid by the seller, they certainly are not representing your best interest. As a seller, I like to, you know, where I guide people, and I do intermediary work. So if I say anything disparaging, I'm disparaging my own community. You got to hire the right broker. Someone who's really right for you, because if not, they're just going to take it. They throw this up on websites, business for sale websites, and it's like spray and pray mentality. They're hoping someone will call. So if someone is not going to really learn your business intimately, really work hard to research who prospective buyers are, how they're going to market and demonstrate the market ability. Mm-hmm. And you should also have the ability, if they're not generating any excitement or leads, you got to pull their listing, because most of their listings don't sell.
That's important to know. So do you think then that you don't need a broker? I mean, you can just do it on your own?
As a seller, I would always hire a broker. I would just make sure I hired the right one. Unless if you get approached by a competitor and there's not a broker that's required to necessarily market or advertise the business, you may want to bring in a high caliber one just to help facilitate the deal. And from a negotiation standpoint, but sometimes if it is a supplier or someone approaches you, sometimes your attorney can help for a good percentage, but you want to interview brokers to see what can they bring to the party at that point in time. If you're just going out to the general market and want to publicly list your business for sale, yeah, I suggest using a broker, because even if you get a bad one, and they're just managing the inflow of buyers, I mean, you still have to run your business. You don't want to take your eyes off the ball and start getting busy with buyers and sending out NDAs and having conversations with unqualified buyers. You know, one of the most important things that I tell my seller clients is, if we're going to sell your business, that's all great, but you've got to run it like it's not going to sell. Because if not, a year goes down and you've done some stupid things in your business thinking it's going to make it more sellable, it's probably done the opposite. So you run it like you have to sell it. You make all those decisions. And so bringing a broker in to take care of all the dirty garbage work, you know, handling all the inquiries, even putting together the decks, getting the advertising loaded, even for that administrative work, it's worth the price. So it doesn't take your focus away from operating your business.
Yeah. You know, things that you're looking for, you talk about key indicators, like what should I be looking for when I go in? You mentioned there's 73 key issues that every single business has that's listed for sale that I should be looking for. Obviously, we don't have time to go over all 73. But
we'll do 72.
Yeah, 72. You can put them out like that, like bang them out here.
So that's assuming you start to, you know, we're not talking about specifically related to, you know, identifying the right businesses, what issues to look for. So there's various stages. At the beginning, you get a very generic overview about the business. It's like, it's online, it's like a classified ad. And so you have to be cautious, because in a classified ad, I could make myself look like Brad Pitt, right? But when I show up at the door, it's a whole different story, as you can see. However, there's things that you want to be able to dig in, like understanding the validity of the financials, looking at the margins, looking at the owner, the transition. Who are the key employees? Is this owner willing to stay? Are there any customer concentration issues? Are there any supplier concentration issues? If they have a lease, when is it going to expire? How do you grow the business? What have you done in the past to help to try to grow the business? What keeps you up about the business at night? What are the major threats potentially to the business? Who are the key employees? How much? One of the key things I always like to ask, and that's when you get into, because this is what you're asking now, is almost there's a drop down to that about questions to ask the seller. And some of the things, key questions that I like to ask is, you know, one I mentioned, what keeps you up at night? Because a problem in the business that worries the seller is going to be that same problem to the power 10 in the eyes of a buyer, because the buyer has no gut feel for the business about how problematic it's going to be. So what may be an incident to a seller could be catastrophic to a buyer. The other thing I like to ask is how much vacation they take. And it's never from a standpoint of saying, well, I haven't even owned the business, I'm looking to take vacation already. It's the opposite, which is, I want to know how much he or she is able to spend time away from the business. Meaning, do they have right process and procedures? Do they have good people in place? Sometimes if they can't take any vacation, it may be that they're micromanaging. They may have good people, but they don't empower them and let them do their job. And the other, one other key question I like to ask is, what happens if you get hit by a Pepsi truck tomorrow? What happens to the business? Because if there's not the right people in place, not a smaller the business, the more problematic it is. But if they don't have people in place, and some owners just micromanage the hell out of their employees for no good reason. I mean, the reason, well, I shouldn't say for no good reason. The reason is either they're just micromanagers or they've hired the wrong people. Mm-hmm. And so these are things that you have to be very aware of. And so when you get to those 73 issues, those are all key things that you could drill in to really get an understanding, because the least time should be spent by a buyer on the financials. And most people who haven't done this say, what are you, crazy?
Yeah.
Numbers are numbers. Numbers don't lie. People lie. The numbers are, or the numbers aren't. You can validate them or you can't. And so that's done quickly. And people get crazy focusing on the numbers and start to, why did you spend $1.75 less in marketing last year than the year before? Oh, numbers are the numbers. Get to them, understand them. If they make sense, great. If they don't, that's fine too. Understand why that happens. And then you move on to all the other important parts of investigating a business. And there's infinitely more of those than the numbers.
Mm-hmm. And I like that you say investigating the business and asking right. those questions of what keeps you up at night, because like you said, it's the people you talking to, the owner and the people is different than just looking at the numbers. So I really like
absolutely because that. That's what you're going to run. You're going to be running all those other parts to the business. Mm-hmm. And so that's what you need, especially if you're buying in an industry you're not familiar with. I mean, you need to get a very high level of comfort with all these individual pieces.
Yeah. And I think the key word you said is validate the numbers, because yes. you say the numbers don't lie, but I've been in situations where they put the numbers, it was their version of the numbers, but they didn't validate when you got in.
They didn't validate. Exactly. Like numbers, like I said, numbers don't lie, people lie. So yeah. being able to investigate the numbers, and the beauty about numbers is you can investigate them and validate them. It's math. It's not subject to interpretation. Now, they may have their own way they did things, but this is binary. So the numbers are an easy part of the process.
Right. Let's do just a quick follow last question here is, what is your opinion about buying franchises? Sometimes I hear, oh, franchise is great. You turn the lights on, you make money. And other people are like, oh my gosh, it was not what we thought it was at all. And we lost our shirt.
Franchises are terrific for the right people, mm-hmm. but not everybody is meant to run a franchise. Number one. So you think about this like a grid. When you think about control and support, if you want control, and don't need the support, you don't buy a franchise. If you want the support and don't mind not having control, a franchise may be for you, because you have to follow their recipe, irrespective of what you may think. So if you're a pioneer or uber entrepreneurial and want to test new things, not for you. Like, I love the franchise concept. I'd be the worst franchisee on the planet, because I like to test things. And it's not like, I'm not a rule breaker. I believe rules are meant to be obeyed, not broken, but I like to try new things. And it doesn't fit within the franchise model. However, the person that you, the example that you gave, here's the problem. If you go and buy a new franchise, even a well-known banner of a new franchise, all you have in place is a glorified startup. It's a startup on steroids. All you have is an example. Yes, this banner has worked in some locations under certain criteria. However, you open up a new location, it doesn't mean anything. It's a startup with a bit of a quasi track record. That's why what I suggest to people, if you think a franchise is right for you, and those are good for people, we talked about support and control, but if you don't have the confidence to run a business, or you want to gain some confidence or learn to operate a business, those are very good points that make sense for people, but buy an existing franchise. So find the banner or the brand that makes sense for you, do your investigation, and buy a resale of a franchise. So this way you get the best of franchising and existing business. You bypass the whole startup phase.
That's really smart.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Now, Melanie, you have an answer for anybody who tells you, it didn't work out. The next time they tell you that, you say, did you buy a resale? And I'm willing to bet that they will tell you, now we put up a new location. It took a year to get going. It was all brand new. And say, well, if you have to do it again, would you consider a resale? Would that have been a better choice? And I'm willing to bet right now that they will answer in the affirmative.
I love that. I've never heard that before. It's like getting a used car that they took the hit on the first.
On the depreciation.
Yeah. So exactly. I love that. Well, Richard, thanks for coming today. Tell us where people can find you.
Very easy, richardparker.com. That's it. Very easy. If anybody has any particular questions for me, they could send an inquiry through the contact us page, ask for it to be sent to my attention. But there's tons of free articles and free reports, and people can learn about the process and see if it's something that's interesting and interested to them. And our course is available there, but richardparker.com. Thanks again, guys. I really appreciate you having me. It was nice, fast, got a lot of work. You know, it's like, let's work fast and go home early. Perfect.
Yeah.
I love that. We'll put the link up in the show notes, and people can go there to get your free book and your courses as well.
Great. Thank you, guys.
Terrific. Well, thanks for joining us. Make sure you watch this. I'm glad you watched or share it and leave a reply and like it. And we'll see you next time. And if you're looking to publish a book, reach out to us at EliteOnlinePublishing.com. We work with you to make you a number one international bestseller. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Hey, are you looking to increase your revenue, build credibility, and elevate your brand? This podcast is brought to you by Elite Online Publishing, an innovative publishing and full spectrum marketing company. They will publish and market your book to make it a number one bestseller. Becoming an author is the best way to market your business. So contact them at EliteOnlinePublishing.com today. All of their authors become number one bestsellers.